Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Shooter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm Frank Gao, I'm joined by my co-host Matt Gunlock. Today on deck we have Jared, Dan, and Caleb here to talk to us about MCMC Far East. For those of you unaware, the MCMC stands for Marine Corps Marksmanship Competition, and we did a similar episode last year. Actually, Jared and Dan were on that episode, and we talked about the exact same iteration from a year ago. However, we do have a guest that wasn't here last year. That's Caleb, and I'm going to kick it over to Matt real quick to introduce him.
All right, so for those who don't know who Caleb Dean is, I knew him as Gunny Dean whenever we were both in the Marine Corps. He's now a Seaburn officer, chief warrant officer, or no, not Seaburn, what, comm?
Comm repair guy, yeah.
Comm repair guy, whatever. Some pogue MOS, I guess. But no, solid fucking dude. I met him in 2018. We were out there training on the Bullseye Pistol Range, and this guy comes over. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, you know, thinking stay away from my team. But then like I actually got to sit down and know him and know how solid of a guy he is. Like, he was that guy I would be able to just go to because I didn't know the intricacies of Bullseye at the time. And I could just call upon him and be like, Caleb, what the fuck am I doing here? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And it was just like one of those guys who, you know, helped mentor me in some of the Bullseye shooting sports. And we tried bringing him over to the summer team in 2019, did not work out. You know, big Marine Corps job stuff got involved. Which is fine, but we were able to work out a deal to where he was able to come over for the summer, you know, a couple times a week and train with us, come out to nationals and be part of the team. And then we ultimately, like, the end state was to try and bring him to the big team since he was a gunny at the time and to take over my position. Well, as things worked out, he had a few things in the fire and he got selected to go to chief warrant officer route. And, you know, here he is, his first duty station over in Okinawa, you know, making things happen. And, yeah, he's an awesome dude.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Glad to be here, guys. Thanks for having me on board.
Now go back in your box, repair something.
Oh, that's hilarious. Speaking of like random poke MOSs, the first question's for Jared. So shortly after the last Far East MCMC, you started a team, right? You started a team within your unit and you had an entire year. You did dry fire. You had an intramural match in there. You did get some range training sessions in. You guys bought timers. You got all the equipment together. You did all that. It's difficult to run a shooting team because you have your actual day job and you have operational constraints and not everyone's always going to be available. And definitely no one's going to give you extra credit for doing all that staff work and planning. How do you feel like that all helped your Marines during this year's MCMC?
Yeah. So the whole year of progression has been a bit of a mixed bag, some successes, some failures, but on the whole, I think we're on an upward trend. I sat down with the CEO after MCMC and gave him my after action and kind of pitched like, we were sitting together and he said, like, can you just make this a standing thing? And I was like, well, don't look at the next slide. Cause I was going to ask to make this a permanent establishment. So, he was all on board with it, but then I did have to survive a change of command where the CO, the sergeant major and the XO all turned over and the OPSO all turned over. So it was a whole new crowd. I had to convince them all again. But without the benefit of them seeing their Marines compete the previous year. But we survived that. I've got a battalion order, which has been in draft for a whole year. I'm gonna throw that on the S1 like next week. But we're looking good for that. Purchasing equipment, another mixed bag. Serve Mart, basic range supplies, great. Open purchase request and GCPC cards, not so much. I've had several open purchases with my supply for training aids and blue guns and things like that since like April, and somehow they still have not been able to purchase them. So that was a challenge. And then the other big thing was the PCS season just gutted the core members of the team, which were mostly from the G2 section of Headquarters Battalion 3rd Marine Division. So all said and done with the PCS transitions, we were down to just three core members, me, a staff sergeant, and then a guy who competed as a corporal and then got promoted to sergeant recently after. So us three is the core members. We kind of did a loose training plan throughout the year. We also had Phasmo in the beginning of the year that took a ton of my time. But we did the ISMET about once a month. We'd meet at the armory and do dry fire if we didn't make it all the way to the ISMET. We did a recruiting push over the summer to get new people interested in the team. Division Comstrat made up some flyers and stuff like that with some good graphics. One of the Comstrat guys joined the team, which is great. We have our own media support wherever we go now. So we ended up coming into this year's MCMC with about 12 guys. Just like I learned from you back in 22, we increased the frequency of our armory get-togethers, lots of dry fire, going over the simple things that we could do. And it remains my philosophy that if you get simple things like range commands, like so they understand start signal, the unloading procedure at the end of a stage, like all those basics,
yes,
a lot of the safety stuff, then they can apply their critical thinking to how they're going to shoot, instead of being so worried about whether their finger's in the trigger guard or whether they're breaking the 180. And if that stuff's all natural by the time they show up to MCMC, then they get a whole lot more out of the training. And then I think the feather on top of my program this year is we were able to do one day of actual live fire range training before we went out there. We were trying to work an intramural between a couple of units providing a lot of support and then the FMTC just providing the range and the staff. And a guy had to go on emergency leave and they ended up scrubbing it with about a week before the event. But that opened up the range for one day. So I snagged range 18 out here on Camp Hansen. And we went out there. We did a lot like the shooting team guys do at MCMC, where we did kind of a benchmark stage to see where everybody was at. And then we isolated some things and worked on stance and grip and different techniques, barricade shooting, things like that. And then we ran the same stage again at the end of the day and saw good improvements when, like, you know, just measuring hit factor, lethality factor. So that was good. Got them definitely familiar with the competition stage, doing a stage brief and then making their own stage plan. That was the first time they had ever done it without me telling them, like, hey, you're going to move from this place and dry fire that target. So they did that. It was good. And I think they were pretty well prepared going into MCMC. And then they went through the POI that the shooting team provided. And then we ended up coming out of our eight people who competed. There were 12 on the team, but we got quoted to, nine. Out of the nine people who competed, we got three medals out of it. So two silvers and a bronze for a rifle. And then one first leather for pistol.
Ah, the leather.
Was that you?
Well, that was me.
Sorry.
But I will say, all right, so I'm going to do the race car driver thing. I have excuses and they're lined up.
Oh,
I
Jesus. Like it.
It's a thick sack.
You know what they say about excuses.
I know, right? My wife was interested in going to Korea for Christmas. I've taken a lot of time away from my wife and spent it on Marine Corps things. So this time she came, said, I want to do it. I said, absolutely. And I did not think about the schedule. It was scheduled during MCMC. I missed all the POI days. I got back from South Korea on Monday evening and grabbed my camis, grabbed my nods from the armory and raced to the range. I got up there in time for the night practice. And then Tuesday morning was competition day, straight into it. So I was completely cold. I hadn't shot my pistol in a year. And I missed all the rifle POI stuff. My only rifle practice had been that month before doing that one range. So to come out with first leather, like there's 156, 155 shooters here.
That's pretty good.
I feel good about it. I just wish I hadn't missed the stuff and that I could have been here, like, and got a little more practice and maybe done better. Not that I would have, but maybe done better.
I'll use that same excuse for NCR. You know, I went out there. I think I shot 15 rounds the day before in an M18, and then I went out there and I'm like, well, let's fucking do this shit live. And yeah, it didn't go as planned, but whatever.
Yeah, well, you and I were both in a similar boat in NCR, and I think both of us had some pretty bad stages. They made me reshoot a stage, which then I did so much worse on the second time through. Very, very good times. But Jared, congrats on the rifle medal, and congrats to your Marines. But I know you're not going to be able to make it, but are any of your Marines going to be able to go to championships?
So Sergeant Duman has a PCS in like February, but it's to the NCR region. So he's got to float that with his new command, but I'm hopeful for him. I believe Walker will be unavailable. But I talked to Captain Bod before he left, and he said we can defer entries till 25. So I plan on catching FY25s.
Bob Bayer? You spoke to Bob.
Bod.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you said Bob.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that Bob one guy, Bayer. He's got something to do with the shooting team. I don't know what he does.
Well, quite a bit. Bod does quite a bit. Haven't seen behind the scenes. But okay. Yeah. Great that it all worked out. For anyone who's listening, the common refrain is that it's difficult to get training, especially in Okinawa and Hawaii. But, if you put in the time, you schedule the ranges, and honestly, getting to the armory and doing the dry fire, like Jared said, getting familiar with the timer, getting familiar with the range commands, that provides like a base level of understanding that then you can build on when you go to the Mi'kmaq. And it's better than nothing. A lot of people are starting from zero when they're at the Mi'kmaq. So providing that to your Marines is huge. And honestly, the armory is not going to turn you away if you just say, yeah, I want to show up and maybe do some cleaning, but also do some dry fire. Like most of the time, they're absolutely 100% supportive, because otherwise they're just sitting in their cage, not doing anything. We'll move on. But Jared, you told me that this year's Mi'kmaq had a condensed schedule. Actually, all the Mi'kmaqs are doing condensed schedules. Usually they're about 2 weeks, and they've shrunk it down to a little longer than a week in most cases. For all you guys, you were there at last year's, and then you were there at this year's. What ended up getting cut as a result, and how do you feel that impacted the entire Mi'kmaq experience? And Dan, we'll go with you first on this one.
So two of the big things cut were the qualifications. So ARQ and CPP quals, or what it was, ART. But huge loss in there is the fact that was kind of a bid in for commands. Like, I sent a guy away for 2 weeks and he leaves with over a week and a half of training qualifications that I was going to have to lose him for anyways. So by taking that away, it will devalue the competition to some commanders. Not that that's just or not, but that will happen, because that was a justification. I had one guy he just had to miss some of the training stuff because it went over through Sunday and he needed to break away, but he was able to get out and get back. So the team understood that, not a real issue. And then I think it just kind of impacted how long and broke down the training of each day through the POI was and what it allowed. But all in all, it worked out well and it built on last year. But as a standalone event, I think it was still reaching.
I got a quick question there. You said by taking away the ARQ and CPP, commanders thought it lost some value, which I can see from that perspective. But if you look at sheer numbers, do you numbers say that there was 157 competitors out there? Do you think it really did devalue some of that, or was it just some units were able to get more people in than others?
Well, yeah, every year since I've been out here, it's been growing in numbers of people showing up and knowledge of the event. So it's been on an uprise over the last several years, which has been great. But nobody knew going into it that wasn't happening. So I'm speculating that it's going to be a concern to commanders, not that it was or is. It's a speculation, And I think it will just be for some a harder drive. Like for the younger guys to be out for 2 weeks or a week and a half, and or your non-critical MOSs, whether the young guys, old guys, whatever it is, not such a hard hit. But for you guys that you know you're going to have to lose for that amount of time for the year, no matter what, to lose them with getting that value of the time included, I think was a bite off for some people to use. Like, yeah, I'm going to be gone for these 2 weeks, but I'll come back and I'm not leaving for marksmanship stuff outside of the unit to go qual.
Do you, how do I want to put this? So what do you think from your side of the house, and I guess from all three of your sides of the house, what do you think can be done? Like, do you, you know, you guys are the warrant officers, the subject matter experts of your MOSs. You guys have access to the commanders. How would you frame it to them to kind of keep it going?
Yeah. So I'll start off and then kick it over to you guys. But I think it's just making sure that they understand and where the program is and the purpose of it to share institutional knowledge and push that farther as far as marksmanship goes is the baseline meaning and purpose of doing it. It's not to get the qualifications. That was just a benefit that some people needed to get there. But it's making sure they understand like what the goal is and that they're getting better people back who are going to be able to share that knowledge and information across the unit.
Yeah, I would echo that. And I think one of the challenging things for us at our level, or at least for me, is I can advertise that we're going to get back, you know, shooters with advanced marksmanship knowledge, competitive level shooters, however you want to put it. But if the unit doesn't have the time to do ranges, then they don't share that with other people unless we get out there and do something, table 3 through 6 or our own marksmanship package or whatever. And there's nobody really driving that except for me. It's a challenge there, and it's kind of like I got to put more work on my shoulders to if the only value of the competition is getting back the good shooters and doing grassroots improvement, then I got to go put the seed out in the grass.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's an incumbent responsibility upon anybody who makes it out to one of these McMicks to pollinate that throughout their units. You become the mouthpiece as the senior dude with that experience under your belt push that to your commanders. And having seen the competition and arms program evolve, I mean, I did my first match in 2011, did 11, 12, and 13, back when it was really easy to get a large number of people onto these ranges. And I've stood up a number of teams that I used the fact that people were getting their quals as the basis for the commander letting us go. But it used to be really easy to get people on. When we were doing, you know, bullseye rifle and pistol back in the day, it was okay. Add another relay to it. You could have 550 dudes at a Pacific Division match, and it wasn't a big deal. To the point to where 3-3 from their battalion commander down to the lowliest private, they just filled out the roster completely. Everybody went, and so medals became easy to get because you had so many people out there. But how many people were really they're in it to win it? And I was firmly against the drop of quals, but after talking to Master Sergeant Nick Capco on the team, he really helped me put it into perspective, because there are so few spots with only that 150, you know, 160 kind of number to work with. You're not going to get people sending, you know, 50, 100, 200 dudes to this competition. I think I'd be interested to see what units wanted to send people and weren't able to get them on the roster, though. I think that'd be the other side of this.
Well, I know they had to turn like 60 people away just because, like, when you're doing this style of shooting, yeah, I guess one of the downsides is that you can't fit nearly as many people in because there's time restrictions, all that kind of stuff. It's not like just having a relay, but the level of training that these Marines come back with is just so much more valuable that they can pass on to other Marines. And, you know, it just a little aspect of giving them a small tip, showing them how to dry fire, stuff like that. I think that's huge. But by sheer numbers, yeah, you can't fit nearly as many people in, but you get a better product back by in each individual, I think. But they had to turn away, I think, 60 people. That's huge. I mean, whenever I first competed out there in Okinawa back in 2019, there was 167 people on the roster. And now, you know, we had 157 people this year, but having to turn away, you know, 60 people, it's growing.
Absolutely. They probably would have been damn good competitors as well. You know, I think that's the other thing that you see is when you don't have to worry about the qual, you don't get a guy that's there just to get the qual anymore. Like that guy just doesn't get the opportunity anymore. And so it does become a, I'm going to win this thing. So and this will bleed into some of our future questions here, but the showcase of talent does become more of the way to go, because I mean, there were times when the division matches were 3 weeks long and every single competitor at the division match would leave with a coach's course certificate. Everyone would leave as an 0933. And you want to talk about tangibility for commanders. I mean, that was definitely a bid for that success. But again, what quality was it if a coach's course is being taught to 500 or 600 people at a time?
Exactly. And before we started recording, me and Caleb are having a bit of a conversation. All of us were kind of having a conversation, and it comes down to, you know, not to knock the coaches course or anything like that, but you have guys that are going to these courses to become coaches, and you know, they're at the beginning of their journey. So they're learning how to do specific techniques. They don't know all the techniques. So a lot of it is regurgitation of what they've learned and not full mastery of what they've learned. So it's not until you get to the team level, or a post and station team, or, you know, a unit team, whenever you're seriously practicing to win it, that you really increase your abilities to understand the intrinsic knowledge of what is marksmanship.
Yeah, very well said. But Caleb, want to get your thoughts on the condensed. Were you able to go to last year's MCMC and compare it to this one?
No, I didn't shoot last year. I had a Phasmo. The year before that, I did get to shoot out here when Dan was the gunner out at the range. That's where we met. And he put on a hell of a match that time. It was the 2 week format with all the practice stages and the AM PM kind of arrival times, but with about the same number of people, just a lot more time with it. So I do feel as though losing the practice stages really for the tyros, for the new shooters, you really lose the sets and reps of understanding your score, analyzing your score, and really seeing what you need to improve. Being a 2A zone guy every single time, it's you know, accuracy is what I was born and bred with, and seeing how my score shifted compared to the guy that Alpha Charlie'd everything in half the time was a really important learning experience for me that my tyros didn't get this year.
Well said. Jared, thoughts on the condensed format?
Yeah, like I said, I missed most of the POI stuff, but right. It kind of brings us back to the number. And from my team's group chat, and then from the competition days, we were out of there pretty early most days. I mean, you guys can speak directly to this year's, but it seemed like 1500 was like a pretty standard. So things ran really smooth. The operation of the range was really good. Gunnar Enright's got a decent crew running things. And then some of the rangeisms they were able to do, deviations and stuff, so that we could do more stages on one flat bay range at the same time, basically. Mm-hmm. It went really smooth. So I'm wondering if we can't increase the quota for next year to get more shooters out there. Because I don't see anything wrong with a full 1700 day. And last year, the shooting team guys were getting out super late, but we were getting out like at dark each time, which dark in December here is like 1730. But yeah, we could have fit more shooting in my opinion, because of how smooth everything ran.
Yeah, I think I'd like to talk to that. And so, you know, NCR was the first one, you know, Okie's the second one. And I think they're just trying to find that balance of each location has its own balance and everybody does after action. So, you know, I think we'll see next year how it goes, but I think you're going to find that balance and like they're going to see, okay, we were able to do this in this amount of time. This is a format we ran. This is how we ran it. We can increase these numbers by this much if we do this. So it's kind of a test bed.
Yeah, I did have a quick question for you, Matt. So going into one of these MCMICs, what's your ideal? Like when you plan out the day, like ideally, what time are you shooting for in terms of like finishing?
Geez, it's been a while since I've done one of the, since I've planned a MCMIC. We typically plan for finishing around 1600-1700. Sometimes we'd go over. And Dan can probably speak to this too, because like me and Dan and his staff and CO that he had there at the range when we planned Oki in 2019, we were all in communication with each other. But the schedule, I want to say was an hour and a half formats per class to get the training and the shots down range and the instruction. So we typically tried finishing around 1600-1700. And sometimes we would go a little bit later, depending on, you know, people that we had to work with a little bit extra. But yeah, that was a typical day, you know. And then the team guys, we were getting everything set up for the next day by, you know, we wouldn't get off the range sometimes until 2100. You know, it's late days specifically for the team. And that's what a lot of people don't see. They see us out there during that time. Mm-hmm. They don't see everything that goes on afterwards, because we would be getting all the classes set up. We do a quick rehearsal dry run. You know, if it was stages, I mean, Dan was instrumental whenever he was the gunner out there, at Hanson, you know, we'd set the stage up. Hey, Dan, can you come over and check this out? Like, can you look at the angles? Does this fit within the SDZs? I need you to move this over here. I need you to move this over here. All right, cool. You know, and he'd go to the next range to check SDZs for that range. And so we're kind of reconfiguring the stage to where it fits within the SDZ. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of moving parts that people don't see on the back end.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
If I could jump in on that. It's so not to nothing, but the support staff and the team and everybody who's putting on the event, their time matters and they have to have enough time to do the thing, but that's not what we're there for. We're there for the guys to get better and participate in the competition, learning and competing. But there's a point of diminishing returns. It's always a battle for anything that you're trying to learn and teach. There's a number of rounds that you could shoot before you're just shooting and making bad habits because you're not breaking good shots. There's an amount of time you can listen to a class before it's gone. And for everybody, that's different in how long that is and how that class has to be done. But it's a constant battle. So I think when we did those shorter classes, and the classes were even more condensed this year with the condensed timeline, like they covered everything, but it was in a simpler format, less science than instruction was included in it. So it was like, hey, this is the process, not the why behind the process, which if you led over from last year's to this year's, kind of that instruction just brought everything right back to the forefront and just smacked it out the back of your head, back to the front, and you're ready to go. But for the guys, for the Tyros, at Dean's point, they didn't give them the grassroots knowledge and understanding of how we got to that point. And they just hit the okay button and started going.
Okay. Interesting. Caleb, you hit on this briefly, but the MCMIC is an instructional forum, but it's also a competitive forum. And there's always a balance between the two. Like, are we trying to train people? Or are we trying to showcase the region's talent? So how do you think that Far East did in terms of striking that balance this time around?
So, again, I came from 3 week long division matches where you're out there talking about the theory of barrel harmonics for hours on end. And to Dan's point, I mean, there is a point where you just kind of go brain numb on those things. This match did feel a lot more like a showcase of talent as opposed to a grassroots instructional thing. And I see some advantages and disadvantages to that. I think the biggest short-term goal we have in the competition and arms program is to feed more and better people to the Marine Corps shooting team so the commanders there can use them as the bastion of marksmanship and a recruiting tool and all of the lines of effort that go along with being a Marine Corps shooting team. And it puts a lot more individual responsibility, unit responsibility, on that cultivation so that it can be showcased at this level. So if they haven't been to an intramural and this is their first match, then they're going to be blown out of the water. They are going to time out. They are going to have penalties with this format. However, if that person goes back and spends their own time being a mouthpiece for the program, spends their own time going to the armory to dry fire, buying a BB gun or an airsoft rifle, and continuing to practice, then they will be that properly cultivated thing. But it was more of a showcase of talent, and I do believe that puts a lot more individual responsibility, and I'm not sure yet if that's a good or a bad thing.
Okay. Jared, thoughts?
Yeah, I think because of the condensed schedule, I think some of the Tyros came into it not really knowing what to expect. And then because it was so condensed, and like shooting through the weekend, not as much time to digest. I'm looking at some of the like intangible benefits of the old schedule. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit easier for Tyros to see like, oh, I can get to that next level and I can be like that guy over there. This year, just a feeling, but I felt like there were a lot of the Tyros were sitting there looking at some of the guys who had shot a lot and been like, oh, I'm never going to get there. I don't think any of them would have said like, oh, I'm just not going to come back next year because I can't get to that level. But I think some people felt discouraged and thinking like, oh, if this is the training to get to that level, maybe I just don't have the natural ability. So I think there's probably some roadblocks there and some things that, you know, we can work on as engaging leaders to talk with those guys and work with them on it. But that was my impression. It seemed like it was almost two separate camps. And some of the Tyros, I think, kind of felt like they were just along for the ride.
Yeah. It's worth noting that Tyros will feel that way even in the old format, but you just feel like it was that much worse or that much more aggravated this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my first Mi'kmaq. I was watching you shoot, and I'm like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that. You know, and I don't know, over the years, I think we figured out that I'm slightly better at rifle than you are. I don't know. It was like I applied some effort to it, and I figured out that like the Venn diagram circles weren't that far apart, and I could get them to intersect on me a little bit. This year felt a little bit different, though.
Okay.
Hard to put my finger on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
That's not helpful.
No. It's all good. Dan, what are your thoughts? Just the balance.
Yeah, just going back to what Caleb was saying, like it does really just put the onus on the unit and the individual to prepare them to go and actually compete. And I think that's a great thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's labeled as a competition. You should be going to compete, not to be bred into competition or taught how to compete. Like you're going to a competition. But with the new format that needed to be advertised, I think was the biggest letdown, is that this is the expectation and this is where we're going and what we're doing. It's going to be a limited POI and we're competing, and that's the expectation. So people went in expecting the same thing, where like, hey, these guys are going to be able to teach my guy better than I can teach him because I'm not that good. So I'll just let them teach him. Then they show up and they get minimal instruction sent into it. So it just makes
I will
it
also say a thing I forgot is that things people could not control out here in Oki, but two of our intramurals, they're supposed to be one each quarter, and the two immediately preceding Mi'kmaq both got canceled for different reasons, one for weather and one for some unit complaining that they weren't going to meet their rifle training quota before the end of the fiscal year.
And then they didn't do it anyway.
So they canceled the intramural to make room for this some unit to send their Marines to the range, and then only 71 people showed up. I got
a quick question for you, Dan. We were talking about selling points to commanders earlier, and one of the selling points was having the qualification. And before, the format was a 2-week long format. Now it's condensed down to 1 week. Do you think commanders are a little bit more amenable to having a 1-week format, or do you think the 2-week format is still an easy sell to those commanders?
No, I think the one week plus the weekend, like you give up your weekend and you take the week out of work or out of the office, then that's a huge sell. Like it's way easier than 2 weeks out. Absolutely.
No, that's all I had. So, you know, when you're driving a group to get through training, sometimes you don't get quite enough time or rounds to encourage experimentation or discovery learning, as we call it. How do you feel about the balance this year between discovery learning and coaching by the Marine Corps shooting team? Was there much of that discovery learning, or was it kind of get through? And Dan, we'll start with you.
Yeah. So there was specific like discovery learning time put to it. And it was something that we had included in last year's one, too, or the team had included in last year. So it was a thing. I think in this one, the difference was it was much earlier and there was less instruction through the period because it was a shorter time frame. So it came earlier with less instruction. And then without the follow-on, like, duration instruction throughout the discovery learning, where I was like, hey, go and try these things. And then the team would be moving through and individually coaching individual or two people at a time and going over their techniques, their grips, their forms, whatever, and working through those things. So it was definitely there, and I think it's great to do. It just didn't have the background for a lot of the guys to be ready to do it. And they needed a little bit of help. And I don't know that all of them got it. I know it was still happening. Just we weren't there for as long a time in individual sections that it was as opportune.
Jared, what do you got?
Yeah, because I missed the POI week, I don't have too much to go with on that. I did talk to my team coming out about how the POI went. And I think I have, and I realize I'm the dude who doesn't schedule this stuff. I don't design the POI. It's really easy for me to armchair it. And I know there's a lot of trade-offs that have to be made. I think target feedback is my biggest thing. So not even talking about time and rounds. There's a lot of dudes who will go out there and run the drill that the shooting team tells them to run. But when the target's already got a lot of holes in it, they're not seeing if their shot was good or not good. And you got to have... You got to have at least Charlies at the end of it, alphas if you're Caleb.
Are they still doing? And Caleb, before I switch it over to you, but are they still doing the target negatives? Do you know what I'm talking about? So target negatives is whenever they cut out the A zone, and your main focus is basically to shoot through that window. Like if you have anything outside of where the A zone would have been. You know, it's obviously a Charlie or Delta, but if you keep everything within like that A zone, you're just basically shooting through. It's giving you another aspect or another view or way of training to where all the targets aren't going to be nearly shot up. And so you do get some kind of feedback, not just necessarily knowing where your target hit. You know, are they still doing that?
Well, I didn't see any target negatives out there this time. They did do that 2 years ago when I shot last. Dan or Jared, did they do that last year?
They did it at MCMC 22 East, but not Far East. And then I talked to my guys to ask about that. They didn't do it this year, I don't think. I used it in some of my training because when I did it at MCMC East in 22, I found it very good to stop myself from looking for shot holes. Which was just a habit I needed to break. I needed to just call it, hey, that was an alpha and I'm going to move on. So I like that as a training aid. I haven't seen it used recently.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be something that they maybe bring back because whenever you do go up to a target and you see a ton of holes in, like now you're at your diminishing returns of they're just out there to shoot a gun. Not necessarily to focus on the form necessarily because it's like, racing. Yeah, there's no feedback. They don't know and what the obvious their limits trade-off. Are.
Yeah, the obvious trade-off to pasty targets all the time or reface targets all the time is time. Mm-hmm. But with this POI, it seemed like there was some more time that we could have used. Negative targets are a good way to basically get the same effect, not have to use that time. So I agree.
Caleb, what do you got? Yeah,
negative targets and also reactive targets like steel targets are both fantastic ways to show, you know, where somebody's hitting without having to do the entire pasty step. Until match day, well, for me it was match day two because I shot all my pistol courses on day two. We didn't shoot any pistol at steel. It was all paper, and then on the match day we're shooting steel. It would have been great to have that reactive feedback during our training process.
No, awesome. Those are all good points.
I'll throw a plug in there for teammates as well while we're on reactive targets, because we had teammates in our intramural last year, but we did not the March of 23 intramural in Oki, but we did not have it in Far East last year, but this year they did. And that's another reactive. You can see if you're having the effect, plus the proliferation of moving targets that we just have to do. Like, we need to train on moving targets. It's a huge deficiency.
So overall, what did you think of the competition format? And we're just speaking to competition itself. It includes scheduling, squatting, and stage design. You know, I think we've all seen various different styles of stages out there, you know, from Dean, from your early days, you know, Dan, whenever we first met in 19, and then Jared, what, 22 was your first match. So what, you know, what did you think of that format? And Jared, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think this year was definitely better than last year's. I think the stage designs all maybe not all, I don't want to put too much out there, but there's a lot more forward and back movement. There was stages that really made you think. There were some that you could go fast. It was a pretty simple hey, I gotta go left to right and I gotta hit all these targets as fast as I can. But even with those, there were challenges like the mini poppers with pistol. And those were, you could go fast on paper, but you knew when you missed that popper and you had to stay there for a second. So that was really good. Stage design, including teammates and things like that, really good. So I really enjoyed the stages. I watched lots of people run a lot of stages, and pretty much all of them came out and did it a different way. And I mean, last year there was a Virginia count with four targets, and it was like four rounds on each target with a mandatory reload halfway through. And it was just a stand and deliver. And I don't know, it's not the kind of thing I enjoy. And I don't think it showcases our skill and dynamic stuff as well. So I enjoyed the stage a lot better. Mm-hmm. Squatting and scheduling and stuff, it was no issues, and it enabled extra time in early days in the schedule, so it must have gone well.
Caleb.
Yeah, I really expected Jared talking about squatting to say that he was gonna go for a super squat plug here, but I was prepared to shoot that down, but he didn't mention it, so I won't bother bringing it up. So yeah, I think both Jared and I on the rifle team match, there was a case. So overall, the stages I don't think were made to educate; they were made to showcase talent. Going back to our previous point, there weren't any cases of anything as devious as like if you engage this target from this area, you're going to be outside of the shooting zone, and it's going to be a stop or a stage DQ. There wasn't anything that dubious, but there were some things. Both Jared's team on rifle and my team on rifle, shout out to Dan for winning that out there, right? Both of our teams had some problems with some very specific rules. We both ended up using support in a place where we weren't supposed to use support, but there was a support out there, and the rule was just as long as your feet are here. And I feel like those gotcha moments, that's outside of the spirit of what I was looking for from this experience.
I do feel like that was a gotcha moment too. Like they said feet on the sandbag, which to me is like a prescribed position, right? But there wasn't a shooting box like you would have in a stage where you're moving around. And the rule is if there's a proper support that's outside the shooting box, you can't use it. Like, you can't touch it. But when they say like, hey, here's like, you just need to engage with your feet on the sandbags. One of my dudes went kneeling, leaned forward to use a barricade, and his feet were on the sandbag. And to me, like, it kind of like if they prescribe in the stage brief, hey, you have to shoot this left-handed or offhanded or whatever. It was just a specified thing. It wasn't a, hey, the shooting box is just the size of the sandbags. So I wasn't super happy with that, but we probably weren't going to win anyway. And team is such a, like, if one dude messes up or whatever, like, I never expect to win team. So I like it, if I get there, great. But if we don't, like, I'm not losing anything. So it's not a huge disappointment, but I understand what you're saying on that one, Caleb.
Yeah. And another point on stage design that I would like to bring up, talking about how it was more of a showcase of talent as opposed to an instructional thing. And I'm not sure if this was just my squad or if you guys experienced this as well, but we had a large number of people timing out on a lot of the, on both of the gas gun stages that we went. Did you guys experience that too? Or was I just with the JV squad?
No,
I experienced that. It definitely happens.
It happens, I think, every time I've seen it, where those just go because the guys just don't get down to the fundamentals and they're trying to go too fast and they rush themselves out of time.
So one of the things, and since I've been retired, one of the biggest things I've learned in getting more involved with the civilian shooting community, specifically like Zoo City, and just learning from Jason Byerly, a good friend of mine, is you have to learn to build the match. Like some people will build a match to the top 10% and only think about them. But in reality, when you build a match, when you design a stage, you have to build and design to the 50 to 75 percentile. That way, you know, the good shooters are still going to shoot fast, and the guys who are in the 50 to 75th percentile, they are still going to be able to compete in a competition, not have to worry about timeout, and they're going to have a good time. You know, one of the things I look at now is you are selling entertainment, and if you're just dragging people's nuts through glass, you're going to have problems. Like, people aren't going to have fun. They're not going to want to come back. And what are they actually learning? They're just learning how to drag their balls through glass. They're not like getting anything out of it. They get into their own head at that point, and they don't get anything from it. Whereas if you build it in such a format to where they can get it, you are catering to that group. They are going to learn, they are going to improve, and they're going to have a lot more confidence.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way of putting it.
I think they did a really good job this year. Like, none of the stages for the individual competition had any tricks, hidden items, nothing real weird. Everything was built to where anybody would be able to get in there and compete at a minimal level. You didn't have to have great stage planning designs or capabilities or anything and really figure it out to do okay. So everybody had a good chance going into it. It was, I think they met that design at the 50 to 75%. Well, I would say I'd agree that that happened. I've done two competitions and I had hosted the three before that now. And I think one of the things with it inevitably ends up being a split day format where like half the group will go shoot rifle competition, half the group will shoot pistol, and then the next day you flop. But you show up to a stage and inevitably everybody's like, oh, what's the time to beat or how's it going? I think a nice thing to be added to any of the events would be some kind of leaderboard as you're approaching, so you know what you're going for. I think across the board, or at least at the day split, but if each stage just had a running leaderboard or like top five would be an awesome add.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Back in my day.
Well, back in your day, it was a lot easier to do that.
Absolutely.
Not saying that it's not impossible to do. I mean, you just have to compile the scores and put them out. And then, you know, it comes back down to that communication, like, you know, whether utilizing social media or, you know, emails, just be like, hey, our top five times on these stages is this, utilizing practice score to its fullest capability. So, you know, I think that's a good point. You know, hey, what are the times to beat? But also looking at it from a perspective of, I think that that could benefit the top level competitors that are going out there. Not necessarily your other competitors, but it could also really mind fuck the top level competitors, because now they're like, this is a time I have to beat. And so then now they're not just shooting their own game. They're actively shooting a game against another person. So now they may have, they're thinking, I have to do this in order to get this time, and then they fuck themselves. So it, you know, it has its gives and takes, and it really does involve that person understanding their own capabilities and limitations on what they can achieve in a competition, because up to that point they haven't seen that stage unless somebody's posting it on Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly the point I want to make here is being the first guy to run a stage on the first day, we all know is a huge disadvantage. And I'm the only guy here that starts out in the hole. All of you are later in the alphabet and don't have to deal with this. So I'm speaking personally from my heart now.
I have dealt with that myself. I may be a G, but there are times that people have been closer or have not been as close to where I've had to start.
Frank always goes before me, so I'm good.
I start with a fourth place. You know, I start in the hole and I work my way up on the stages throughout the day. And it doesn't get any better for me. I don't get to see somebody else go through it. Is it a huge advantage if I happen to see somebody do a pistol stage on Instagram or Facebook or whatever? Absolutely. Could it possibly be a total mindfuck for me? Absolutely. But let that happen. Let it be done, because the people that are at the top, it's going to come out in the wash anyway. But God, I just wanted to say that I absolutely hate being the one of the first guys to shoot the stage. It's a huge disadvantage.
I don't know. I look at it now. It's like, but you know, I've been doing it consistently. Like Caleb, you've been doing it kind of back and forth, you know, between your job for 13 years now, you know, 12 years now, however long it's been, or has it been 10? I don't know. Doesn't matter. But you've been off and on over the course of a decade. Whereas I look at it now is, okay, I'm going to be the third or fourth shooter up. It's a given, you know, in a major match format. And so I kind of look at it now. It's like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to play my game. And I'm going to have fun. I know at some point I'm going to be the first one up. So I think as you get more experienced and you're doing it for a longer period of time, more consistently, it just becomes part of the show.
There's other dimensions, I think, that come up when you start doing more and more competitions. For me, there was a period of time this last summer where I noticed that, like, the stage after I went first, like, I would usually bomb because there's a swing. There's a yes. swing of the entire squad shoots, and then the entire squad shoots again on the next stage, and then you're the last one. And that's so much time to basically get lackadaisical or just get into a different routine and not properly visualize and prepare the same way you have, because you know you're going to be up first, and there's the nerves, there's the tension, knowing that, you know, it is mentally difficult going first. On the whole like leaderboard discussion that you guys are having, I've seen it implemented at matches before. All it takes is that, you know, I imagine that it's the same guys from the shooting team that are running each stage. All they got to do is put up like a dry erase board and just put up the high hit factor. It's really easy. But yeah, I like seeing that, especially when I'm shooting and at the competitions out here, and you have seven different divisions. I want to know who the top dog is in my division, and that usually helps me.
So we've kind of asked all the questions that we wanted to. Before we get into the next segment, which Dean kind of brought up, is there anything that you guys want to talk about, mention, bring up? And Dan, we'll start with you.
No, I think that kind of hits everything. Just say great job to the team coming out and the staff from FMTC out here. They put on a good show.
Caleb.
Yeah, I absolutely want to echo what Dan said about the staff doing a great job. I know it's completely different from their day job. I've never had to run a Mi'kmaq before. Dan, you have. They just did a great job adapting to it. I didn't see any problems with, you know, them beep booping the wrong things into the iPad or screwing up timing. Like they handled all that very well. And based on the number of safety DQs we had, they were also Hawkeyes on the booger hook on the bang switch as well. I know the gunners, the gunner that's out there now, Zeb, this is his first Mi'kmaq to do, and I'm excited to see where the future intramurals and stuff like that go from here. now that he's more familiar with the competition and arms program. And then I just know that I have a lot of work to do on the rifle to be able to showcase what I'm capable of doing and finally go distinguish with the rifle, you know.
And Jared?
Yeah, I went well. The staff at FMTC did a great job. Gunnar Enright did a great job. I think one of the we didn't talk about it before with the condensed schedule, but my understanding is the shooting team spent more time with the FMTC staff before we got there that previously they weren't able to do, and I think it paid dividends. There were still some things where like I know how things are supposed to run, and I'm like, hey man, you have to score that no shoot and the hit because it broke both targets, like some weird things like that. But there was definitely a lot less of that than last year, because last year the FMTC staff that's used to just pushing people through ranges, needing to do scoring and RO duties at each stage, did not run nearly as smooth. This year it was much better with only minor, like, hey man, that's a weird scoring thing, but you have to score both.
No, that's all good stuff. Kind of get to the next segment, you know, since Bourbon is the second half, and I don't think we've ever really talked about Bourbon. No. It just hasn't, you know, just catchphrase.
Well, Bourbon's the silent partner, right? We talk about the bullets, but Bourbon, like, we are often under the influence of Bourbon while doing so.
I mean, we're recording this. It's 7:14 in the morning right now. It's the day after Christmas. I've already had a glass of Bourbon because, well, you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And so to kind of kick this conversation off on Bourbon, you know, just to kind of give some type of flow, Dean, we'll start with you on this. Top three bourbons under $50.
Ooh, top three bourbons under $50. Okay. I got to go with my limited availability, in Japan here.
Oh, bullshit. You have better, like, capabilities of getting the harder to find bourbons over in Okinawa than what we do in the States.
That's true, but they're normally the more expensive bourbons when we're talking about those. I'll start with my absolute go-to, and this is not a super popular opinion because people see the label and they make a lot of assumptions on that. But Wild Turkey 101 is by far the best go-to bourbon that you can get, in my opinion. I think rounding out the last two, far second would be something like Jefferson's for the light flavor and the drinkability of it, and then maybe some Basil Hayden or something like that. I know you have a lot of Old Forester over there. We can't get that out here, but when I was stationed in Maryland, I was grabbing that by the half gallon frequently.
What about you, Dan? You're muted.
Yeah, I was finding it. It clicked off. If it's wet, then generally I like it cold. But I wouldn't be able to tell you what my favorite is. I don't go hunting for them and really picky on them. I find an old dog and just let it. I'll keep buying that one. It's fine.
Okay, so then we'll just rephrase it then. What's your go-to bourbon?
Right now, I got the Gentleman Jack downstairs. I've been enjoying that for a while.
Okay. No, that's a good choice right there. I actually, earlier this year, a buddy of mine, Jeff Wentz, he retired, and he invited six of us to go out to the Jack Daniel distillery, and we tested three different barrels, and he bought one of those barrels, and we had them all bottled up. And we, you know, he handed them out for his retirement. Like, so everybody got a bottle of Jack Daniels during his retirement. And it was the bottle that we went out and picked. So, you know, that was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, that's great. I remember being at my buddy's place back in New York, and his dad brought out, he had a collection of Jack Daniels and multiple years long of different barrels and crystal bottles of whatnot, and he's like, all right, this is this old, and they just kept getting progressively better. So it was a nice one for time where I don't generally enjoy a timed whiskey more. So I don't know, sometimes the cheaper younger stuff tastes better.
Yep, nothing wrong with that. And I've come to find that your better bourbons are under $50, and they are those go-to bourbons. All right, Jared, how about you?
So something like Dan, I like things that are wet and cold, but mine are limited to non-alcoholic drinks. So my go-to is water. My other go-to, just when I've put in a really hard day's work and I've earned it, is a cucumber lime Gatorade. But they don't have that here. So Aquarius and Pocari Sweat, typical Okie first term Marine answer. But those are things I enjoy.
Okay. No, all good choices, especially for the non-alcoholic ones. We really appreciate y'all coming on. I think we got a lot of really good feedback. I think if the team listens to this, they're going to hear some really good things, things to keep, things to change, ways to sell it. But we really do appreciate y'all coming on. We hope you have a happy new year, and we look forward to the next time we get to talk. So for those of you guys who are listening, thank you. Please let us know how we're doing. Rate us, review us on whatever, platform you listen to us on, and we'll talk to you next time.